It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to a nationwide quiz party. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, whose new book, Reading I've Liked, is already a bestseller, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, unrehearsed and unbound by any rules, Information Please continues on its carefree path. And tonight we have our trio of experts with us, the marvel of music, Oscar Levant, the sage of sports, John Kieran, and the king of quotations, Franklin P. Adams. And as our special guest, we have with us that paragon of pitchers, the eminent Lefty Gomez of the New York Yankees. If you think you know the answer, Mr. Gomez, you may raise your left hand. Now remember, for each question missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. We're off with a question coming to us from C.H. Lewis of Swissvale, Pennsylvania. I'm going to give you a group of phrases, gentlemen, that involve water and that are used in connection with various sports. Explain what's meant in each case. Get 3 out of 4. The first phrase is casual water. Mr. Kieran.
Casual water is a phrase in golf, meaning water that has either leaked out of pipes or has come down in the form of rain and is not a regular water hazard itself, a brook or a lake or pool.
That's exactly right. What does a foot in the bucket mean? There's another phrase about water. Mr. Gomez.
That's a hitter that pulls away from home plate when he's up there hitting at a ball.
Good or bad form?
Well, with Simmons it was great, but some of the other hitters it's been bad.
That's right. And how about the phrase, take a dive? Mr. Gomez.
That's, I don't know, it's supposed to be in fighting where, or some sports where they don't try their best and lay down.
Yeah, that's putting it elegantly. What were you going to say, Mr. Levant?
Prearranged by usually a money influence, not to do your best.
sounds just like a dictionary tonight. Yes, it's a fall in a fixed fight.
I like it. You know what's going to happen.
No suspense for you. How about a water jump? A water jump isn't what sport? Mr. Kieran?
It's in steeplechasing, usually called a Liverpool because of the big water jump in front of the grandstand at Aintree, where the Grand National Steeplechase is run.
Well, I didn't expect all the extra information, Mr. Kieran, but I'm very glad to get it. Now, how about this one from C.D. Larson of Bethesda, Maryland? Get 2 out of 3. Who was the first emperor of Rome? That's the first part of this question. Very simple question. The first emperor of Rome. Mr. Kieran?
I should say Augustus.
Augustus would be right. No, his whole name?
Augustus Caesar.
Caius.
Caius.
C.A. Caesar.
Julius Caesar Octavianus.
That's right.
That's right. I don't know what you'd call him if you just met him casually in the street. Mr.
Levant?
Kai?
Oct.
Octo? Oct? All right, Oct.
Say Oct, you get 8 musicians.
How about the first emperor of the French, gentlemen? Who was that? The first emperor of the French, Mr. Levant.
Charlemagne. 800.
No.
Well, that's the first one I remember.
You reached too far back for that one. First emperor of the French.
Somebody the first.
You're wrong on that one. It was Napoleon Bonaparte. Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say Napoleon, but I was very slow about it.
Oh, no, not at all. How about the first king of Italy? First king of Italy. Careful on this one, gentlemen. Mr. Kieran.
Well, I'll try. Wasn't it Emmanuel?
Yeah, give him a number.
Victor Emmanuel the first.
The third.
No.
The second.
The second. The third is now king. So we got 2 wrong out of 3, sending $25 and a set of the Britannica to Mr. Larson. Now, do you remember who the first emperor of the French was, Mr. Levant?
I still think Charlemagne was.
Well, you take it up with Napoleon Bonaparte. The next question comes from Harold Levine of Jersey City, New Jersey. Get 2 out of 3. Now, listen carefully, gentlemen. You're going to hear, partially described, the high spots of several past World Series games, just as you might have heard them over the air. I want you to tell me what action climaxed each of these descriptions and to identify the series in which the plays occurred. And we have an announcer here who's going to do it for us, and he's going to start in with the first one. Let's have it.
It's 3-2. Cards leading, last half of the seventh. Gehrig's on first, Musil on second, and Coombs on third. Lazarus at bat. Alexander now pitching instead of Haynes. The count is 2-2, and here comes the pitch.
Mr. Gomez.
Alexander struck out Lazari with the bases loaded.
Who's playing?
Cardinals and Yankees.
Yeah, when did it take place, Mr. Gomez?
1936.
26.
28.
26. I think it was 26.
Yeah.
That's right, Mr.
LeVant. That's close.
Good enough, Mr. Gomez. That's swell.
Seventh inning.
All right, Mr. Kieran. It's very hard to catch Mr. Kieran napping. It's pretty good when he's napping, too. Now let's have the second of them.
What a game. It's the ninth inning, and the score is tied 3-3 with the bases loaded. Ruth on first, Koenig on second, and Coombs on third. Gehrig and Musil struck out in order. Lazari's now at bat. He's set for the pitch. Mill just sights carefully, and here's the throw.
I got two hands up. Mr. LeVant.
Well, Mill just pitched for Pittsburgh, and he threw the ball over my head in the stands. And consequently, a man scored, and that was the end of the series.
Yes, who scored?
The Yankees.
Coombs scored in a wild pitch. That's right. Remember how the thing came out? What was the...
That was score? All, brother.
You add anything to that? It certainly ended the game. How about it, Mr. Gomez? Can you add any details to...
The game. It started the depression in Pittsburgh.
Hmm?
It was 1927, I think. That
28.
Was the end of 27, pardon me.
Why don't you split the difference, boy?
I don't think Joe O'Milius ever pitched another big league game. I think he pitched himself right out of the picture.
You make it sound pretty sorrowful, Mr. Kieran. Well, that's the correct answer. It was Coombs scoring on a wild pitch over the catcher's head, and the Yanks won 4-3. Now, how about this third and last of them?
What a spot for a pitcher. Powell on first, Dickey on second, and Gehrig on third. Push him up, Tony Lazari is rubbing his hands in the dirt. He steps into the batter's box, cocks his bat. Kaufman takes a look over his shoulder, gets the signal, and here comes the pitch.
Mr. Gomez had his hand up almost at once. How about it, Mr. Gomez?
Well, it was a World Series against the Giants. Lazari hit a home run with the bases loaded.
That's right. That's right. What year?
Oh, I don't know the year, but I think I was working.
36, Mr. Gomez. That's perfectly right. Well, I didn't expect to catch you on these baseball questions, Mr. Gomez, but you got them very well all the same. How about this one from Mr. W.E. Adams of Princeton, Iowa? Talking about the weather, as people do, give me a line from Shakespeare that mentions the following kinds of weather. The first, rain. A line from Shakespeare mentioning rain. Mr. Kieran.
It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven.
Yes, that's a very good and very familiar line. Do you have another one in mind, Mr. Adams?
That's the only one I thought of.
It's the only thing in Shakespeare I know.
You can't tell. Maybe you can do better on this one, Mr. LeVant. How about a line from Shakespeare that mentions wind? Wind. Wind, Mr. LeVant?
Is the wind in the candle? Is that from Shakespeare?
Candles in the wind? No, it's the title of a play
by Addison, but they usually go back to Shakespeare.
I don't know that it does. Mr. Adams?
Blow, blow, thou winter wind.
That's a dandy.
Thou winter wine.
Yes. Well, I should have said wine to begin with. How does it rhyme? Blow, blow, thou winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude.
As man's ingratitude.
That's right. And how about a line from Shakespeare that mentions lightning? Lightning? Mr. Kieran?
Well, it's one about lightning in the Collied Night, I believe. Isn't that the one you have there?
No. It isn't even in my memory.
That's from a sonnet.
I'll take it. How about, how do the witches meet, Mr. Kieran and Macbeth?
Thunder, lightning, rain.
Yeah, that gets in all the weather. That gives us 3 out of 3. And sends us on to this one from George Lewitta of Newark, New Jersey. Identify 2 out of 3 on this. Identify Winnie Mae, Daisy Mae, and Pinky Mae. How about Winnie Mae? Suppose we begin with Winnie Mae. Mr. Gomez?
Winnie Mae was an aeroplane that Post and Gatty flew around the world.
That's exactly right. Good enough. Did you know that, Mr. Adams?
No.
You see? Okay, now how about Daisy Mae? Daisy Mae.
I know Daisy Mae.
Well, leave her out of this. Yes, Mr. Gomez.
Daisy Mae's in that cartoon. I don't know the...
Say, you're a find, Mr. Gomez. That's right.
I got one of those last week, too, if I...
Sure. I'll take that answer. It's in a comic strip. Anybody know the name of the comic strip?
Daisy Mae.
Little Abner, Mr. Gomez. Sure. Hey, that's good.
She's
a reader, Mr. Kieran. How about Pinky Mae? Pinky Mae.
Is that a baseball player?
That's right. Which one?
Third baseman with Philadelphia.
That's right. Sure. Very good.
There's another May you didn't mention.
I want you to give the other boys a chance this evening, Mr. Gomez. What did you say, Mr. LeVant?
Georgia May.
Georgia May, who is that?
I'm wrong. I thought of another girl. May gets
book. Georgia May is a book by Maxwell Bodenheim.
That's right.
That's right. Long time ago. I quite remember. Now, how about this one from Mrs. John B. Harden of Newton, Massachusetts? Again, get 2 out of 3. Who are the famous parents in fiction of these less well-known children? Parents of these children. First child is Daisy Brooke. Name her parents. Daisy Brooke.
Mr. and Mrs. Brooke.
Well, I don't know how I'm going to break you down, Mr. Adams, because that's perfectly correct. And who are the Brooks?
There you have me.
Mr. Carrot?
Would they be the people who started the Brook Farm Colony?
No.
Well, I'm sorry.
Well, I...
The Brook Dairy people?
No. I think, in fact, they got all the Brooks now. Meg March Brook and John Brook are characters in Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. Is that what you meant, Mr. Adams?
No, never read it.
All right. That gives us one wrong. Have to get the next two right. Who are the parents of George Osborne? Mr. Kieran.
George Osborne was the rather sappy hero, in a fashion, of Thackeray's Vanity Fair.
You have any parents?
Yeah.
His father was...
A coal dealer, I believe.
His name was?
Little Georgie Osborne. Becky Sharp was the mother. I've got the wrong generation.
You got the wrong one.
Amelia was the mother.
That's it.
And George Osborne was the father.
That's quite right. Thank you. Now, how about Robespierre Higgins? Give me the father and mother of Robespierre Higgins, Mr. Levant.
Isn't that Fanny Bryce's brother?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. Fanny Bryce's brother. And
on the radio,
yeah,
I hope.
That's right. And the name, do you remember the
father's name?
Yeah.
Fanny Bryce's father.
All right, let's call him the Mr. and Mrs. Higgins. That's quite right. You know that, did you know that, Mr. Adams?
No, sir.
Very good radio program.
I seldom listen to the radio.
Well, you should listen to this. All right, how about this? From Carl J. Carey of Detroit. Name the man who came directly before and the one who came directly after the following men in their respective positions. Get 3 out of 4. For example, Mr. Murphy... our Attorney General. Who came before and who came after him? Mr. Levant.
I think Homer Cummings. Homer Cummings.
That's right. And after?
Robert Jackson.
That's quite right, Mr. Levant.
They both wound up the same place.
Yes, that's quite true. Now, how about Robert Bridges as Poet Laureate of England? Who came before Robert Bridges? Who came after Robert Bridges? Mr. Adams?
After him came Mr. Mayfield.
That's quite right. The present Poet Laureate of England. Who came
before
Robert Bridges?
Came Alfred Austin.
That's quite right. Alfred Austin. It's a name not very many people know, I should think. Don't you think so, Mr. Adams?
He wrote some pretty good stuff.
I bet you couldn't. Can you remember anything that Alfred Austin wrote?
April, April.
That's William Watson.
That's right.
All right.
Austin wrote...
some pretty good
Woman
stuff.
With a Serpent's Tongue.
Well, I can't say that's William Watson. That's right, it's Alfred Austin. That's right. Now, how about the one who came before and the one who came after Edward VI, this King of England? Be careful. Edward VI, this is very hard.
No, it isn't.
All right, Mr. Levant?
Edward VI, I would say Queen Victoria was before, George V afterwards. Otherwise, George V before and George VI afterwards. You can have your pick there.
I'll take the blue plate. No, you've got the wrong Edward. You're just a little ahead of yourself. Mr.
I picked out two Edwards.
I think, isn't that in the time of Richard III and around there?
It's pretty far back, as a matter of fact, because the one who preceded Edward VI was Henry VIII, our old friend
I'm
Mr. Lawton.
A little beforehand at that.
And after that, Mary Tudor. That gives us one wrong. And now who preceded Burley Grimes as manager of the Dodgers and who came after Burley Grimes as manager of the Dodgers? Mr. Gomez, does this strike a sore note with you?
Well, we don't follow much with the National League.
Well, I'll have to throw this question to Mr. Levant.
Stengel was before him.
And who came after him?
Lippy Leo DeRocher.
You haven't heard of him, Mr. Gomez?
We have now, yes.
Mr. Gomez, you wouldn't care to venture a prediction on the outcome of this little shindig of yours, would you, by any chance?
Yes, I think the Yankees have a good chance to win.
You do?
Yeah.
You want to be quoted?
He's out on a limb.
Yeah. All right. It's a good thing we're playing in Manhattan tonight. Well, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross, ever timely, comes up with a discussion of Lucky Strike's batting average at the tobacco auctions.
Well, Mr. Fadiman, every auction is really a World Series of a sort, with buyers from all over the South competing for the tobacco. So it's interesting to watch what happens as the 1941 auctions progress. And this year, as every year, it's the same. Lucky Strike is consistently paying the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobacco. For example, during the first 3 weeks of auctions at Oxford, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company paid 24% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 24% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Ladies and gentlemen, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, isn't that reason enough for every smoker to try Lucky's?
I think it is, Mr. Cross. And I timed you at just 52 seconds. Now we'll go on with a question from Maryland N. Cressy of Ossining, New York. Get 3 out of 4 on this. Where in poetry or song are these bodies of water mentioned? I'll give you 4 of them. The first is Lake Leman. Mr. Keurig.
Lake Leman lies... Schillen lies by Leman's walls, I think. The Prisoner of Schillen,
yes,
by Byron.
That's quite right. That's getting it right. First crack out of the box. Now, how about Auber Lake? A-U-B-E-R. Auber, Mr. Adams.
That's in Poe.
It is in Poe. Where in Poe?
Eulaloom.
Eulaloom is right. Can you give us the lines in which Auber is mentioned?
It was down by the dank tarn of Auber.
Yes.
In the something to something of Weir.
That's quite right. Right. The misty mid-region of Weir. Very good.
Most immemorial year.
Habit.
It was night in the lonesome October.
Is there any way of stopping you, gentlemen?
Well, it's politely. Lonesome October.
Now, how about Monon's Rill, another body of water? Monon's Rill, Mr. Adams.
Where danced the moon on Monon's Rill.
Yes, it's from...
And deep his midnight lair had laid in lone Glenartney's hazel shade.
Oh, boy. I bet, Mr. Kieran, you'll stop there yourself.
Yes, I would.
Yes.
But who wrote it?
Who wrote it?
Scott.
Scott.
Didn't you know, Mr. Taylor? You just wanted to test
them. Certainly not.
Didn't know?
No.
Well, you can get right back on this program anytime you wish. How about a body of water known as Rillera?
Oh.
Mr. Taylor.
Well, in what volume of poetry?
Where would you find that mentioned?
Well, you'd find that in the Hutsut song.
Yes, in the what is the Hutsut song?
Hutsut.
Yeah.
So forth.
Is that where you stop?
That's about where I stop.
Hutsut Rolson on the Rillera and a brawler Seward. Is that the way it goes?
Well, that's an approximate translation. Yes.
You're supposed to repeat that 4 times, but I refuse
to
do it.
Yes.
The Rillera.
It's Swedish, but it isn't.
No, Swedish, but it isn't. And the Rillera would be
a brook.
Double talk for some sort of stream. All right, now how about this one from Russell Newbery of Mount Vernon, New York? Get 2 out of 3. Can you identify the cities in which these famous crossroads exist? Massachusetts and Connecticut Avenues. Mr. Taylor.
Washington, D.C.
Yes, Washington, D.C. Market and Sutter. Mr. LaGuardia.
Philadelphia?
No, that would be wrong. Mr. Taylor.
San Francisco.
San Francisco. There is a Market Street, of course, very famous street in Philadelphia. I don't think there's a Sutter that crosses it. I count that one wrong. How about 10th Street and 4th Street crossing? Mr. Kieran.
New York.
Yes. Now, how does that happen, Mr. LaGuardia, that in our fair city we've got 10th Street and 4th Street crossing?
4th Street runs east and west and north and south, down in Greenwich Village.
Well, now, don't you think you ought to change that?
Well, north and south and east and west.
I mean, isn't it?
10th Street runs across, and east and west. 4th Street north running south and across.
You must remember, Mr. LaGuardia, that no one can see you making those odd gymnastics with your hands.
Well...
Well, isn't it about time something was done about 10th Street and 4th Street crossing each other's
making
sense?
Well, that's rather historical, and people down Greenwich Village, they kind of like it.
All right. That fixes up the Greenwich Village vote. Now, the... the next one is from Virginia McElroy of Beverly, New Jersey. Get 2 out of 3 on this. This is, again, a musical question. You're going to hear excerpts from 3 well-known musical compositions, and I want you to tell me the meter in which each was written. I think that you can give me the names of them, too. They're not hard to recognize. Let's have the first. Mr. LaGuardia?
2-4.
Pardon?
2-4.
Don't think.
3-4.
Oh, we've got 2-4, 3-4. What do you think, Mr. Taylor?
4-4.
4-4 is right. 4-4
sounds like an auction.
Mr. LaGuardia, what was being played for us? What was
Hail
it?
To the Chief.
Hail to the Chief, yes. Now the next. Mr. Taylor?
The slow 3-4.
The slow 3-4, and what's being played, Mr. Taylor?
The Pilgrim's Chorus.
Pilgrim's Chorus. Very good.
Mayor LaGuardia knew that, too.
I'm sure he did.
In fact, he told me.
The mayor was waving his hand.
I can see that ambition to be a conductor, Mr. LaGuardia. If we had you on television, everybody could see those hands of yours waving around. And now the third and last. Mr. Taylor.
5-4.
5-4 is right. What's being played, Mr. Taylor?
The second movement of Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony.
Yes, otherwise known?
Pathétique.
The Pathétique, yes. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
Perfect.
Well, yes, perfect. All right. How about this one? From Annette Turngren of Minneapolis. Mr. LaGuardia, this is all about mayors. All right? However, about imaginary mayors and not real ones.
Nightmares?
Identify the mayor of fiction who sold his wife. This is in a novel. Mr. Adams.
Of Casterbridge.
Yes, the mayor of Casterbridge. By whom, Mr. Adams?
Thomas Hardy.
By Thomas Hardy. Now, can you identify the mayor who was outwitted by a wind instrument player? Mr. Taylor.
The mayor of Hamelintown.
Yes, very good.
Who was outwitted by the Pied Piper.
That's quite right. Did he have a name?
No.
I don't think we
no.
Just come down to us. He's immortal, but without a name.
That's it.
Right.
That's what made him immortal.
now, identify the mayor who held all but one high job. All but one high job. Not our distinguished guest of this evening, but an imaginary mayor.
In Mikado?
That's right. You've got it.
The mayor of Titipu.
Yes, that's exactly right. He held all but what office, Mr. Adams?
Mikado.
Well, he wasn't the Lord High Executioner. Wasn't that Coco? But he held all the other offices, First Lord of the Treasury, Lord Chief Justice, and so
forth. Hold on a minute. Wasn't that Poobah?
Poobah. Poobah is right. Didn't someone say Poobah?
Yes, he was Lord Mayor of Titipu.
Yes. Well, didn't you say that, Mr. Adams? Or am I just imagining that you said it?
You just imagined it.
No, I think he said it.
He said he wasn't Coco.
That gives us at least 2 out of 3, and probably 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one? Mr. LaGuardia, you may remember that some time ago, Mr. Maury Maverick, was at that time mayor, I believe, San Antonio?
Yes.
Was on this program, and you sent him a question, which stumped him, I may say. And no doubt you were very happy about it, in the friendly way that you mayors are with each other. And now we have a question from Maury Maverick. of Washington, D.C.
I bet Karen gets it.
Now let's see if you can handle this one. Get 2 out of 3. What is the root of the word mayor? Where do we get the word? Mr. Kieran.
It's the comparative degree of magis maior maximus in Latin.
Meaning?
Greater.
Yes.
Larger.
Yes, that's right. Did you know that, Mr. LaGuardia?
I knew that.
Yeah, all right. Now, when was New York City incorporated as a city? When?
Greater New York?
Yes, Greater.
1898.
1898, that's right, Mr. LaGuardia. Under whose administration?
Seth Lowe.
No, that would be wrong.
The first mayor.
Pardon?
Seth Lowe was the first mayor of Greater New York.
He was? Wasn't it under...
Van
Wyck?
Van Wyck.
The Iceman.
Seth Lowe was the first mayor of Greater New York.
But the in 1898, what was Van Wyck? What was he?
Mayor of New York City.
Oh, mayor of New York City. That's right. Now, how many mayors?
Business?
How many mayors has New York City had?
I'm the 99th.
Well, if you're the 99th, you've left out a couple of mayors. According to my information, Mr. LaGuardia, you are the 103rd, if you don't mind
me
promoting you.
It's not counted that way.
Why not?
Well, for instance, I would be the hundred and... You see, I served two terms.
Yes?
But I'm still the 99th. I wasn't the 99th and the 100th.
No, I realize that. I mean, you're the 103rd different mayor we've ever had. We've had 102 mayors before you.
Well, I've lost 4 of them. I still... I'm 99.
We'll have to adjudicate it, but in any case, we're over the top because we've got 2 out of 3. Mr. Kieran, would you happen to know anything about
that? I think the mayor is right on that. I think, for instance, you call Franklin D. Roosevelt the 32nd president, whereas he is the 31st different person who has held that chair. You see, Cleveland is counted twice because there is an interim administration.
Yes, I understand that.
Well, I think you will find you count the names that the little flower is correct.
Okay, it's very possible. How about this one from Lucy Harmon of Eastford, Connecticut? Who is the person referred to in each of these lines from old songs that I'm going to read to you? Who is the I in the song that goes, when the enemy come, of course I run, for I'm not cut out for the army? Who is the I in that song? Mr. Adams.
Captain Jinx.
Captain Jinx is right. Who is the you in They Have Taken You Away? Mr. Adams.
My darling Nellie Gray.
What were you going to say, Mr. LaGuardia? Same thing. Very good. And who is the her of I make a call twixt 8 and 9 on her who shortly will be mine? I make a call twixt 8 and 9 on her who shortly will be mine, Mr. Adams.
Little Annie Rooney.
That's very good, Mr. Adams. That's 3 out of 3. That's going very good. Now, how about this one from Riva T. Bressler of San Diego, California? Can you identify the incidents in literature or mythology in which a life depended on the following things, in which a life depended on opening the right door? Where would you find that? A life, Mr. Kieran.
Bluebeard's wife. She opened the wrong door.
Well, she shouldn't have opened any door, I think. There's another. There's a famous story in which a life depends on opening the right door. The Lady or the Tiger.
Oh, wait a minute. There's another one. It's where the girl is lured into going into a wrong passageway and falling down and breaking her neck.
Well, that's very possible. How about the one in which a life depended on a thread? A thread. Mr. Taylor? Mr. Adams?
Damocles.
Damocles. And how about the one in which a life depended on a guess? G-U-E-S-S. A guess.
That's me.
outside of Mr. Adams, I think, what were you thinking of, Mr. Kieran? Do you have one in mind? The riddle of the Sphinx.
The riddle of the Sphinx.
Well, as I see it, we're okay on that unless we find that Mr. Kieran is wrong, which is probably not the case. And here is Mr. Cross with something that you never knew till now.
If the American Tobacco Company, makers of Lucky Strikes, were to stop advertising in magazines, stop advertising in newspapers, fire Mr. Fadiman and myself and our board of experts, and stop all radio advertising, if, in short, your package of Luckies were delivered from the factory direct to your cigarette counter without benefit of any advertising whatsoever, the price you pay for a package of Lucky Strikes would not be reduced one iota. For the cost of these activities, as no one seems to realize, is such a small fraction of a cent that if they were entirely eliminated, the saving per package could not be passed on to you. Well, you say, I had always thought that advertising costs money. It does. But advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Lucky Strikes. The makers of Luckies have always believed that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The tobacco, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos for Luckies. For instance, 21% more than the market average at Mount Pleasant, Tennessee last season. 34% more at Lebanon, Kentucky. And so on all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Mr. Fadiman, have I proved that in Luckies at least, it's the tobacco that counts?
Quite conclusively, I think, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $50 and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you, Mr. LaGuardia, for taking time out this evening to have some fun with us here. Next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams and Mr. Levant will be handy, and we're proud to announce that as our fourth guest, we have persuaded that eminent showman, comedian, and wit to take another crack at information, please. Mr. Fred Allen. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10, and if it's...